Hey, good afternoon to everybody. We're just about to start. We'll just do a brief audio check before we start the class. Once you hear the audio, just type audio OK at the bottom of your screen. They'll confirm that audio is coming through fine, and then we'll get going. Okay, Hannah, good to see you. Karen in Texas, nice to see you. First time here. Jean, South Carolina. Thanks a lot, Jean. And what we'll be taking up today, we're going to deviate from what we planned to do, the fundamentals. The area that we're going to do is just dealing with the Maimonides, dealing with the different categories of creation and going into a discussion about angels. I did think that apropos, also because he talks at the end of that chapter, that's in his Fundamentals, Chapter 2, that this is something which should be discussed one-to-one, and also when a person is ready for the knowledge. And there's also a lot of knowledge which, quite honestly, is very esoteric, and which I don't feel capable of going into and making statements of truth on. It's an area that was written cryptically and passed down in that format for a reason. So I thought what we'll do is we'll do something from Yeshaya, the book of Yeshaya, and it deals with human perfection, and I think it's something which everybody will be able to appreciate. And that should be what a public class should be on as well. But I think the other areas that we did take up in Maimonides about the fundamentals were very important. And maybe we'll do is we'll go back to his 13 principles in terms of going further with the fundamentals of Torah. Maybe we'll do that the next time. But for now, if you want, we'll be working from Isaiah, which is Yeshaya, and that will be chapter 28. Okay, so once everybody has audio, just type in audio okay at the bottom, and we'll start the class. Okay, ZNCO61, thank you. Hopefully, Dick USA will be able to get his audio working. And again, we'll be working from Yeshaya, from Isaiah 28. And it's a very interesting, just one verse that deals with five different perfections that a person should have. So that's what we're going to go into, what those five perfections are. All right, Gabriel in LA, Gene, South Carolina, thank you. Okay, so it looks like the audio is working all right, so why don't we start? The actual area is Yeshaya, which is Isaiah 28, and it's verses 5 and 6. And this was actually, I came across this as looking through the Gemara in Megillah, for the previous holiday, just had a Purim, and it quotes these verses, and deciphers what exactly is the verse talking about. So the first verse says, it's God is saying that on that day, in the future, the God of hosts will be a crown of delight and a diadem of beauty to the remnant of his people. Meaning to say that this God will be a there'll be a certain honor, a certain worthiness that a certain remnant of the Jews will be deserving, a certain attention that God will give them. But that will be based on five perfections that are outlined in the very next verse. So it says that God will be a crown of glory. A crown means something which is a mark of distinction. That's why a king is the one who wears a crown. Because you want to have the distinction made. Everybody knows who the king is and who is the one that you must follow his decrees and his statutes. The crown is also put on the head, not just because it's visible, because the head is the seat of wisdom, euphemistically. So we want to show that the one who has the greatest wisdom, that it's adorned. The actual seat of wisdom is adorned. So that's why a crown is used. Now it says that God will be crown of glory to the remnant of his people. That means the Gemara, or the Talmud, says, it's Megillah 15b at the top of the page, if you want to look at the Talmud. So it discusses that, you know, again, God will be the crown of glory to these people, which means to say that these people, their perfection is that they're following God. So that's what we could understand, a simple explanation. What does it mean that God will be a crown of glory to them? It means to say that these people will have a perfection in which they're following God. So now let's go into the five perfections that Yeshaya, that Isaiah talks about. What are the five perfections that a person must have? So I'll read you the verse if you don't have it in front of you. And it states that, again, this is not all the Jews. Not all the Jews will be deserving of this perfection. And of course, when you hear them, you'll see, because they aren't areas that most people are really striving for. But they should be areas that we all strive for. Okay, so it says the first level of perfection is Ruach Mishpat, which means a spirit of justice. That's followed by Yoshev al Mishpat, one who sits in judgment. Then the next perfection is Gevurah, which means strength. Meshive Milchama, one who returns from war. And Shara means gates, to the gates. So it's very cryptic. What exactly is this talking about? But the rabbi has been looking at this verse, deciphered it, and they stated that since it says in the previous verse that God will be a crown of glory to the following people, so these traits enunciated in Yeshaya 28:6 must be talking about perfections. And there's a list of five of them. So now we have to go through each one and see what exactly are the perfections that Yeshaya is saying that in the future God will praising these people. And again, this applies to all time. So when we talk about perfections that people have, that God will praise or God will favor in the future, these should not be left to other people. We should be striving for these. So let's go through each one. Now, according to the rabbi's explanation in the Talmud Megillah, they say the five perfections are as follows. When it says that one perfection is that a person has a spirit of justice, it means that he judges his own self. Okay, and you may want to write these down as we're going along just so you can review them. So the first one is, what's the first perfection a person needs in life? That first perfection is that he judges himself. He judges his own nature. He's not afraid to look at himself, to contemplate his actions, to see where his personal flaws are, and we all have them. But the first perfection is where a person is not deterred from looking at himself and admitting fault, admitting guilt about the self. Okay. That's the first one. The second is Yoshev al Mishpat, is that not only does he judge himself, not only does he look at himself, but he judges all areas truthfully. Any area that he encounters in life, whether it's relations with other people, business matters, just reading something on his own and admitting Do I know what this means or not? He's after truth. He judges everything truthfully. Okay, that's the second one. The third one is Gevura, might. And this now refers to the fact that he will not only judge himself, but he will act. If he sees something negative about himself, if he sees that he's now getting involved in a certain part of the day, he feels his emotions getting the better of him. And let's say, for example, he wants to speak poorly about somebody else behind their back, which is a very strong drive that many, many people have. But he holds himself back. He does not give in to that drive. That's called gevura. That's called might. Okay. I see some of you are still having problems with the sound. If we could just do one more audio check and just type audio okay number 2 at the bottom of your screen. I just want to make sure that nobody else is having the problem. I'm not sure why certain areas do experience, but we'll try to see if we can just confirm that everybody else does have the audio. Now, let's just go to the actual area in the Talmud. And because it's you can have one extra word that opens up an insight. So that's the third one, was Gevura. Okay, Gene, thank you. That was the third one, is Gevura. The next one in the verse, let's just go to the last two perfections. The last one is Meshive Milchama. That means to say, returning from war. What war are they referring to? The war of studying Torah. Studying Torah is considered to be a war of sorts. I mean, it's a battle. And the last one is Shar, the gates, a person who goes to the gates. What gates are they referring to? This is referring to a person who rises up early to go to temple and to the study hall, and he's the last one to leave at night. So he basically opens it up and closes it down. He's the first one in, the last one to leave. Okay, Gabe in Minnesota, thank you for typing that in. Hopefully they'll be able to see that. Okay, and for everybody else, again, we just want to get a confirmation that the audio is okay. So if everybody can just type audio okay 2 at the bottom of your screen. We just got Lima and Gene in South Carolina, the only confirmations we got. So if we could just get confirmation from everybody else, just to make sure there's no audio problem. Okay, so those are the five perfections. And we'll have to now define why these five are the essential characters, essential character traits that are necessary for a person being considered one worthy of God giving his crown, so to speak, to them. Okay, so let me just repeat the five again. Okay, Dennis, thank you. Steve in Maryland. Khan in Florida, thank you. Okay, so the five perfections we now have to define. Why are these the five that Yeshaya is talking about? So again, I'm reading now from Talmud Megillah, which is page 15b. And it takes each word from this verse in Yeshaya 28:6 and explains what does each one mean. When it says, Ularuach Mishpat, a spirit of judgment, Zeh Hadan Es Yitzro. This is a person who judges his own inclination. He looks at himself, his instincts, and he determines what needs to be repaired in his own personality, his value system. That's number one, a person who judges his own nature. Number two, Yoshev El Mishpat, a person who sits in judgment. Zeh Hadan Din Emes Lamito. This is a person who judges a matter truthfully. Okay. And the next one was Ula Gevura. So we said the Gevura to might means that a person will overcome his own emotions. And what does the Talmud say on this? Zeh hamasgaber al yitzro. A person who becomes stronger on his instincts. Now, of course, we have to understand how does this happen. How can a person, why does one person give in to the instincts, and why does another person overcome them? So if you want, now they will open up the questions to you, because that's how we like to run the classes, to open up the possibilities for you to explain. So what would you suggest would be the differing factor between person A, who has an emotional inclination and he gives into it, and person B, who does not give into that emotion? Why does person B not give into the emotion? What difference is there in him? All right, so I'll open up the floor now to all of you. If you have a possibility, type it in the bottom of the screen. All right, so that was number three. And we said number four and number five were respectively that a person is in the Milchama. He engages in fierce debates about Torah. He's involved in Torah. But all, the last one, that's number four. And number five, the fifth perfection, is that he gets up early and stays late in terms of praying. He's the first one into temple and the last one to leave. And also for study. So that we'd like to understand what the perfection is in terms of a person not only that's engaging in study. Why isn't that sufficient? Why don't we just have a list of four people? Why is there two more? There's a distinction in areas of Torah study. One is that a person engages in it, and it's a passion. It's like a war. And even more than that, the fifth perfection is that he gets up early, engages in it, and he does it throughout the day, and then at night, it's still the last thing he does at night. So we'd like to understand what that additional perfection is. Not only is he involved in the activity, but he's rising up early to do it, and it's the last thing he does in his day. So what's the perfection is? So there's two questions I'm giving to you right now. First question is, what's the difference between a person who succumbs to his emotions and he sins and a person who doesn't? And number two, what is the difference between a person who engages in Torah study, even on a daily basis, but then a better person would be the person who rises up early to study, and also at the end of the day, it's the last thing that he's doing as well? Okay, so those are the two questions. All right, just to confirm you have the questions, just type okay on your screen. That'll just confirm for me that you have the questions, and then we'll open up the floor to all of you. So if you have both questions, just type okay on your screen. Okay, Gabriel, thank you. Now, once you have the questions, think into it and see if you have a possibility. Let's take a few moments and think about them. Okay, Dennis, I'll repeat the questions again. We're going through a list of five perfections that Yeshaya, that the prophet is talking about, that certain Jews will earn them a certain honor. But it's basically five areas of perfection that a person has to achieve that we should also be striving for. And we're asking on a few of those perfections in a few questions. The first perfection was that a person is not afraid to look at himself and admit guilt or admit error about his personality. The second perfection is that he's honest in all areas of life. He judges a matter honestly. He has no bias. He has no agenda other than truth. In all areas of life, he is always truthful. Number three is that he can control himself to the point where he overcomes the desire to do a sin. Okay, so number three of the first question we had is, what's the difference between a person who sins and a person who doesn't? What difference is there in the person who controls himself? So let's take that question first for everybody. You tell me, what exactly do you think exists in a person that can control himself and not give in to a desire? Well, what more does he have in his makeup or in his personality or in any area? What is the difference in that person? That's the question. Okay, Gabriel, you're writing the one who gives. I'm not sure what you mean. Okay, Lima, I will give the answer, but I just first want to have everybody here thinking about the question, because learning, the purpose of learning is to, you get the facts in a certain area, and then you think about the questions, and then you try to arrive at an answer on your own. That's how we develop. That's how we can see deeper wisdom by using our minds. So by posing the question to you is giving you an opportunity. Okay, so you're saying temptation, Lima, is the reason why the first person gives in. But what is the reason why the second person will not give in to a sin? What is the difference in his nature that he does not give in to a sin? Okay, so Dennis is writing, the person who does not give in has self-discipline with a need to do the will of God. Okay, so he understands God's will, and he has self-discipline. Okay, I would say that's true. I would say there's another more central element that he has that you didn't touch on yet. Okay, Lima, he's got self-control. Agreed. The person who does not give in to a sin has self-control. Is that all? Okay, Gabriel is writing, he or she is disciplined and able to judge a situation on the basis of its truth for life. Okay, very good. Meaning, Gabriel is now getting to the core of the issue. And that is, it's not merely control, but when a person functions in life, you have to, the main question to ask here is, what moves a person to do any action in life? What moves a person is that he feels that that is the good for him at that time. And rabbis have said this in the past, and I remember years ago, 20 years ago, hearing a rabbi making this very point, that any person, when he does anything, whether he's a robber or a murderer, whenever he does an action, he must justify in his mind that what he's doing is a good. Whatever twisted way he rationalizes it, he has to feel that it's good. Like the person who's stealing, he says, well, my family's going to starve if I don't get food, and the bank's got plenty of money anyway. They're not going to miss a few $100s. So he justifies stealing money, and so on and so forth. So the person feels that there's a good that he's doing whenever he does any action in life. So also, when a person sins, he has to feel that, well, I need this right now, and I'll become good later, or I don't really agree that this is a sin. I'm not doing it in a way that's a real sin, or it's just it's too much of God to ask of me, and I just can't do it. Whatever way a person tries to rationalize it, he has to. Now, the person who doesn't sin is the one that can see clearly that what is true in life, like Gabriel is saying. A person has the ability to judge a situation on the basis of its truth for life, meaning a person has a certain sense, a certain idea of what is good. Now, the more a person educates himself, the more clearly he will see whether something is a good for himself or whether it's a destruction to himself. But that itself also has to be judged in a certain framework. Well, is it good for me physically? Is it good for me emotionally? What is the, is it good in what context? This is a very important step now, that when you say that something is good, in what framework? So the framework that we always refer to in Torah is in terms of what God says is the good for man. Again, morality is that which God determines. Without God telling you that murder is evil, you have no way to determine that murder is evil. Who says that killing isn't evil unless the one who created life tells you that this is precious and you cannot take this life away from other people. So without there being an objective voice of what is moral, you will not have any way to arrive. That's why there was a whole problem with the whole Terri Schiavo case. Should they take out the feeding tube? Should they not? Where is the objective voice over here? They were all leaving it up to different whims of the emotions. Is it better? Is she in too much pain right now, so we should put her out of her misery? Or is life something which we save no matter what? So they had all these different angles, but they didn't approach it from the view of what as objective in terms of God's system. So that's why he gave us a system, so we're not confused and bewildered as to what exactly should we do in a given case. So now, like Gavriel is saying, you have to recognize what like Lima is writing now. So it's the ability to recognize the positive over the negative. Yes, exactly, Lima. Stated a little bit better, just to recognize what is absolute truth, what is absolutely true. And truth is only that which God determines. God determines what is true. Is this an evil or not? So right now, when I'm about to do an action, I now want to know whether this is good or not. But again, good in terms of following God's system. We have to couch the word good or bad in a context. And that context is in terms of what God set out for mankind. He gave one system to man. There was only once in all of history where God revealed himself and gave a system, a religion to human beings. And that should be a religion for all to keep. Jews keep 613 commands. Non-Jews are supposed to keep at least 7. They can keep more. But that's the minimal. And the person wants to convert, by all means, we accept him fully, and he's completely equal to a Jew from birth. So, but there has to be a minimal of what God demands for a person to deserve the right to live. He's got to have at least these 7 commands. So again, when we say something is good or bad, it has to be good in the context. Okay, so that's the first point. Let me just look at what Gene had written. You just mentioned the word control, self-control, strength coming from God. Well, strength comes internally, Gene. All right, a person's free will is what earns him his reward and punishment. Okay. So that's important to understand. So the first issue that we question is, what is it? And again, for those of you that just joined, Sarah in Washington, nice to see you, Sarah. I see you just logged on. So for you that just joined, we're going over 5 different perfections that are outlined in the Gemara Megillah, which is taken from Yeshaya Chaf Ches Vav. That's Yeshaya 28:6. In that one verse, there's a number of perfections that it talks about. There are 5 perfections that are important for a human being. And the third perfection that we've spoken about is a person who overcomes his instincts. And we were just wondering, what allows one person to overcome his instincts and not sin? And we explained that is his conviction. He sees clearly in his mind that something is going to be a negative for him. Not negative in terms of it'll hurt him physically, but it'll be a negative in terms of his soul, his perfection. Because this, again, is the whole purpose of man's life. So when we say something's a good or bad, it's a good or bad within a certain system. What system are we referring to here? The absolute system, God's system of truth, which means the Torah. Man's perfection, the whole perfection of man is his soul. We're not looking to perfect ourselves physically. The physical is something which we only experience in 70, 80, 90 years, if we're lucky. And then that's it. Then we are no longer in a physical state. You know, a person passes away, and then his soul is now what can exist eternally. So when we're looking for the good for ourselves, we should be looking at what was really man defined as. Man is not defined essentially as a physical being. There are other things that are physical, but they're not man. Man's definition is his soul. That's his real essence, and that's really what a person should be concerned about. And if a person sins and he damages his soul, that should be something that he really takes. It should not be a light matter. It should be something which is very serious to him. Okay. All right, so any questions up to this point? Let me just pause for a minute and see if any of you have any questions. If you do, just type them on the screen. So let me just give you a moment. Okay, so that's the idea in terms of why a person will not sin, when he sees clearly how something is hurtful to his soul. For example, speaking bad about somebody. A person will keep on speaking bad about people because he emotionally wants to raise himself over others. But when he sees that he's damaging himself and he's hurting others in the process, and he sees that it's really just a game in his own mind, that it's not really going to change anything when he speaks poorly about somebody else. The other person remains the same with their own values. So you haven't hurt them. You haven't done anything. What you have done is shown yourself to be insecure. And since you're speaking poorly in public, because a person doesn't speak poorly about other people when he's alone, a person verbalizes negative statements about other people only when he's around other people. So as a rabbi once mentioned, usually it comes back and it hurts him more than what he intended. Now, if a person will see clearly that his evil speech about somebody else, his mocking somebody, degrading other people, is not going to achieve anything he wants. Additionally, and more primarily, that there should not be a desire to want to hurt another person, because they have a right to existence just as yourself. If a person goes into the area and studies it and starts to realize, again, knowledge is the only means that a person will be able to change his views. Without knowledge, you remain with the same exact views. The instincts will just keep on playing on you. Because without an influx of knowledge, without an increase in our understanding of what's true, and there's infinite amount of wisdom out there to be learned. But if we don't increase, then the only thing which motivates us is the only other part of our personality that exists, and that is our instincts. So a person will either follow the instincts or they'll follow the intelligence. There's no other option. Okay, Avram in New York is asking, how do you relate this to Adam Harishon, to the first man? Well, I assume when you're talking about when he ate from the tree. If you look at the verses, you'll see that Chava had said, she looked at it and she said it was nechmad lamara v'tov lamachal, that the food was desirous in appearance and good to eat, and also that she will be like God, knowing good and evil. So she justified it. She said there is a good here. There's a good in its characteristics and the objective, and she fell sway to the argument of the snake that they'll increase knowledge by eating from this. So there was a justification there as well. Okay, and Gabriel is saying the instincts tend to be selfish. True, that's true. Yes, Abraham. Okay, I think I answered your question. The sin of eating the food. Anytime a person sins, there has to be a justification. And it doesn't matter how great the person is. Actually, they say that the greater the person, the greater the sin. Meaning to say that a person is very great, it's because he has strong drives that he can redirect to perfection and to studying Torah. But when those same strong energies are not going towards Torah, but they're going towards sin, so then the sin will have the same amount of gravity. Okay. All right, so that's a very important lesson in terms of knowing how we can not sin. That will only be achieved by an increase of knowledge. And if we see that we are sinning in a certain area, and again, this is the first perfection that Yeshaya, Isaiah, is talking about here in 28:6. And he's saying the first one is that a person will judge his own inclination, his instincts. He will not be afraid to look at himself and be honest. He wants to be truthful with himself. So he examines himself and he sees where he's lacking. And if a person will see that he's lacking in a certain area, what he should do then is to investigate what my values are in this area. I see that I value the sin over being righteous. So let me see why. Let me understand what am I placing a higher value on, and investigate it, and then compare. Compare the benefit of the sin to the benefit of doing a command. And if a person can achieve that clarity of thought, that will help him overcome. And the truth is, the more he rehearses it, and the more he holds himself back, or she holds herself back from that sin, the easier it gets. So there has to be a clarity of thought, and when you see clearly how something hurts you, you won't want to do it. A person will look at sin as if he's taking poison, but the sin is much more of a lethal dose than a physical poison, because a physical poison can only kill your body, whereas a sin that you don't remove from is something which can hurt your soul eternally. And that should be very weighty on our minds. That should not be a small thing. And no, it's not easy. There are many times that impulses are very strong, and that's why you have Yom Kippur every year. Why is Yom Kippur part of the Jewish calendar? And it's not just one time in your life, because God understands that it's man's nature, that he will sin, and he'll do Yom Kippur at the end of the year. I'll even do repentance, I'll do tshuva that night. But again, the emotions are strong and they will cause him to sin again in the future. But hopefully he starts minimizing the amount of a sin and the gravity of the sin. Hopefully he can get to a point where he's controlling himself. But, I mean, there is a human part that stays with us our whole life. And God knows this, and therefore he allows Yom Kippur to be every single year. Because every single year we need that atonement. Okay. Any questions at this point before we move on? Because we had a second question that I'd like to reiterate for those of you who just joined. But let's just make sure that this point is clear before we move forward. So if there's any questions on this point, please type it in and I'll see it on screen. Gabriel is asking, is sin not a misdirection of spiritual energy? If so, then sin is a depletion of our soul. I don't know what that means, the term spiritual energy. Those are terms that I don't usually use. A person has free will. So sin is when a person is using his free will to do something which is against God's will. Like I wouldn't say you have spiritual energy and another type of energy. A person has a certain amount of energy, its libido, his regular energy that he can put into one area or another area. There's no different types of energy. A person has a certain, and a person can perfect himself. The greater his perfection, that means the more in line his intelligence is and his emotions with what is true. And at first it's difficult, but as a person sees more of how the Torah system benefits him, and how learning Torah is an enjoyable thing, then he will be more inclined to put his energies into learning Torah more and living properly, because he sees how every single command, whether it's waving the lulav or putting on tefillin or praying or saying a blessing over food, he sees in every single area he understands why he's doing it, which is important. We should be doing this. If there's a command that any of you are doing that you don't understand why you're doing it, you should inquire. Because it'll be painful if you're just doing actions that have no meaning to you. But when you're doing something and it makes sense to your mind and it appeals to you, to your sense of what's right, and then you start to appreciate the system more, and then you arrive at the ultimate command of loving God, of appreciating this creator that gave you this system. But you can't arrive at an appreciation if you're not learning on a regular basis and asking questions. So it is of the utmost importance that you set aside time to learn on a daily basis and go into the areas that you're curious about. By all means, study what appeals to your own interests, and ask questions and then derive understanding. This way, when you do the command the next time, now it's a pleasure. I understand why I'm doing this now. It makes sense to me. Okay, Gabriel. Yeah, the term spiritual and energy, it's like the more of a pop Judaism term, so I like to stay away from anything which gives any credence to, you know, this pop Kabbalah. You know, there's so many different things going on today. Energies. Somebody was telling me recently they go to this Kabbalah center in Los Angeles, and they sit and they believe that they could summon energy to heal people in Russia. I mean, it was the most insane type of statement I ever heard of. It's It's right there with idolatry. Imagining powers that you can, it's ridiculous. I mean, we work with cause and effect. We work with natural laws. That's exactly how the whole Torah works. And here you have somebody in the name of observant Judaism is making up a cult type of a group, misleading people, lying to people, taking money from people. It's just a shame. Okay, any other questions before we move on to the next question? Okay, if everything is clear, just type okay in your screen and then we'll move forward. Okay, Gabriel, I'm glad you agree. All right, so we'll move on now to the next question that we had. The next question we had was, again, just to review. So the first perfection that a person must have is the ability to look at himself honestly and to understand his emotions and his instincts and be able to say he's wrong in an area. The second is to be able to look at the external world the same way, with the, and he judges a matter truthfully. Okay, Gabriel, Jean, Lima, Chana, Florida, Abraham, New York, Stephen, Arizona, good. Okay, so let's go in order. We'll come back to the last question, but since this is written in an order, let's go in the order that it's written. Let's understand that. Let me give you another question. The next question is as follows. The first two, all right, that a person has to look at his own makeup and be able to say where he has a flaw in his personality. That's one area that a person is, that's demanded of. But he also has to be able to say what the truth is in any area in life. Okay, so why do you think those two are necessary? Why do you think they're both necessary that I have to look at myself and be able to detect and identify something as negative and be honest about that as well? Why is it that I must be able to, well, not be able to, why is it that I must always be judging every area in life truthfully? What do those two perfections tell us? All right, general question, but think about the fact that you have to look at yourself and be honest about your own nature, to see whether it's looking at your dreams or examining your behavior at the end of the day, catching yourself before you're about to do something, but being honest and being able to detect something as negative in yourself. That's number one. And number two is to be able to judge everything in life, all your experiences, all your interrelations. That also you must judge 100% truthfully. Okay, so what is the necessity of both of those? That's the question. If you have an idea, type it in the bottom of your screen. Let's hear what's on your minds. And again, if any of you come to the class late, the class is being recorded and will be posted on our audio files link, usually within about 20 minutes after the class is over. So you will be able to hear the whole class from the beginning. Again, that'll be posted on the audio files link. Okay, Lima is suggesting that being honest with yourself lets you see the truth in others. Okay, I would agree with that statement. However, the statement in Yeshaya is not saying that you are honest with others, but that in all areas, you judge every matter truthfully. That does not have to be with other people. What's the difference between the first two perfections? Maybe that's a good way to start. What's the difference between one and two? What's the area of the perfection in the first one? The area of the perfection is that you look at yourself. Okay, Stephen, that the same sentiment that I gave to Lima, I'll tell to you. It's, we're not comparing judging ourselves to judging others. We are comparing judging our own natures. And also, the second perfection is to be truthful in every matter. Okay, Sarah is writing, if you misjudge yourself and or the outside world, you're not living a truthful life, but a lie or a fantasy. How can you achieve perfection if you're not seeing things for how they are? Okay, true. But what you made a good, there's one word which I want to just capitalize on there, Sarah. You said, if you misjudge the outside world. Okay, that's what I want to get to in terms of the difference here. There is an outside world, and there's an internal world. And I think that's the comparison that's going on here. Okay, the comparison is between the perfection that's needed. The reason why there are five perfections here is because they're all needed. So we have to look at them. The first two are telling us that there's an internal world. You have to look at yourself with complete honesty, as well as looking at the outside world. Meaning there's no area where you have a defense mechanism set up or you have any type of bias. That, I think, is how we can pinpoint why you need these first two perfections. Let me just read what you have on screen for a second. Lima's writing, difference in one is himself, second is external. Exactly, Lima, very good. Hannah in Florida is writing, you have to be able to judge other areas truthfully to be able to make the right choices in those areas. Okay, true. Abraham, New York. Before you look at others, you must be okay with yourself. You must be able to do this all the time, or you will miss something in yourself. Okay, true, I agree. And but what we're focusing in on is one point that Sarah actually pointed to, and that is the outside world. I just want to say that there's that points to the difference between the two. There's an internal world. Man lives in two lives, but he really should be living one. Man has his own internal thinking, his thoughts, his feelings, his view of himself, his self-image. There's the internal world, and then there's the external world, how things actually operate, and how he relates with others, or how he relates just in terms of his own activities, actions. So there's thoughts and his actions. What Yeshaya is saying here is there cannot be any difference between how you view yourself and the outside world. Meaning there is a tendency in man to view them as different or to favor things. And this is exactly where idolatry comes from. The whole Egyptian culture or any idolatrous culture. It stems from man's imagination, and he looks at his whole internal world as being correct, being true. Whatever I think of, whatever I imagine, that's how the world must operate. So if I feel I need to make a stone god and bow down to it, that's true. But that's ridiculous. I mean, we have the ability to perceive what is true and what is false. We can experiment. We can study the world. We see set laws. A law means there's a consistent pattern of operation. That's what law means, a consistent pattern of operation. And we see that, then we know that that is a true statement. Okay, let me just look at a few more statements. Okay, Gavrilo's writing, the first one determines our own motivations, while the second one allows us to determine how the external impacts on the first and vice versa. Okay, there definitely is a relationship between the two. The primary lesson is, however, that there should not be a dichotomy. A person should not be schizophrenic, in a sense, meaning that when it comes to matters of himself, there he doesn't look at anything negative. Everything's fine and dandy and positive. It's only the external world that he has to deal a certain way. That's not a person that's involved in truth. A person who engages in truth, it starts with his own midos. It starts with his own internal world, and it's expressed in the external world. All right, so there's no gap. First of all, the primary idea here is that you were involved in truth. So the perfections that Yeshaya, that Isaiah is talking about here, is that you are involved in truth. The truth demands that you don't try to defend yourself by looking at yourself internally and coming up with reasons why I'm fine, I don't need any help. Most people are like that. They don't want to admit any type of error, but then you're forfeiting your own perfection. Honesty will cause a person to detect something negative in himself, and he'll be able to work on it, and then he can improve. But without that honesty, there's no way to determine that I have a flaw and that I need help. So again, there has to be that internal honesty, and that has to be expressed externally as well. That means in every area of life, a person is honest. Okay, that's the first perfection. If you're going to live a life, if you're going to live a life where you are having the best life, that means being in line with what is true. The best life means where you are functioning in line with exactly how you were designed and how the world was designed, and you were supposed to mesh with the world. And that is only achieved when you understand the world and you constantly learn about what God made in terms of the physical as well as the metaphysical, which means the Torah lifestyle. When we have an accurate picture of both, then we know how to operate in a way that's going to be the best for us. Okay. But now, keep in mind that this is only in terms of knowledge. But what else do you need besides knowledge? You tell me. Knowledge is one thing that's necessary of the internal and the external worlds. But what, besides knowledge, what else is necessary? And then you have the third perfection. So these are the first two out of the five. Honesty internally and honesty externally. But besides having that honesty and having the knowledge in those areas and breaking down any defenses and not allowing your emotions to try to see the world through rosy glasses. Okay, Stephen is writing way right. The courage to act. Okay, good. Action is the next thing. That's why the next thing that's in the verse is action. That a person is a gibor. If we look back at the Talmud that's referring to Yeshaya here, the next thing it says that's necessary is that you are a gibor. You are strong. And who is this? What does this mean? The Talmud elucidates this and says, Zeh hamasgaver al yitzro. This refers to a person that conquers his instincts. That means action, strength, good lima. Meaning that it's not just abstract knowledge that I have about the self or about the external world, but now once I have this knowledge and I see something, now I have to have the courage, and not the courage only, but the conviction I should have. The knowledge should lead me to the ability to control myself. And this is exactly what we said about 10 minutes ago. What we asked the question, the first question we asked, what is it that will cause one person to sin and another person to control himself from sinning? So the answer is knowledge. So that's why knowledge is the first two things mentioned in this verse. So knowledge has to come first. It's the prerequisite for the next one. The next one is now gibor, that you're strong enough to overcome your instincts. But it's not just a matter of mustering up physical strength or psychological strength. It's if you have that knowledge in the first two areas, then you can see clearly why something is wrong and you'll control yourself. Even though the emotion is powerful, your mind is more powerful. The human mind, the intelligence, seeing something with your mind clearly has more strength than your emotions. Okay, so this is something which is very important. That's why knowledge will enable a person to control. Once you have knowledge about why something is bad for you and harmful to your soul, then it'll be much easier not to give in the next time. Why would a person want to hurt themselves? They don't. Okay. That explains 1, 2, and 3. Those are the three perfections. So the first area of perfection is that there's knowledge internally and externally. Then there has to be the clarity of knowledge to the point that you can get to the level where you do not give in to sin. That's a gibor, a strong person. And that's what they say in Pirkei Avos. Ezehu gibor, who is a strong person? Hakovish es yitzro, one who subdues, he conquers his instincts. All right, so this is directly paralleled by what the rabbis wrote in Ethics, Ethics of the Fathers, Pirkei Avos. But this is not it. This is not the end of the line in terms of the perfections that Yeshaya is talking about. There's still two more. Okay? Okay, so let me just pause here and see if there's any questions up to this point before we move on to the last two. You have any questions? Type them in the screen. All right, looks like there's no questions, so let's move on now to the last two. The last two statements, the last two perfections that Yeshaya talks about. He says that a person is Meshive Melchama. He returns from the war, or to the war. What does this refer to? This refers to a person that engages in dialogue in the war of Torah. What does it mean he engages in dialogue in the war of Torah? That his studying is a fierce, energetic activity. He's involved in study, and it's a war. It's something which it takes strength, and he has a strength to put into it. That's number four. And number five is that he gets up early and stays late in the house of study and in the house of prayer. It's the first thing that he wants to do in the morning, and it's the last thing he wants to do at night. Okay, what are these two perfections? Why are these part of the picture of the perfected individual? I mean, not only does he have the knowledge and the honesty to look at himself and to also judge the external world, and not only does he have the clarity to control himself in terms of his what's right or what's wrong. But that is not enough. That is not enough. Those three alone. A person is missing a very big piece of the pie if he does not have these last two. So the question is, why are these two essential? So you could say very simply, well, studying Torah, that's where he's getting his knowledge from. Okay, so that's why a person has to be involved. Keep in mind, though, it says that he's involved in the war. He's battling. And also, why can't he just be involved in Torah study daily, but not be the first one in the study hall in the morning, and not be the last one to leave? What more is it about a person that is the first one in the morning and the last one to leave? All right, so those are the questions. If you have a possibility, type it on the screen. Lima, you wrote the word defend. I'm not sure what you mean. You'll have to elaborate a bit on that, Lima. Okay, Gene, you're suggesting that this shows dedication. Okay, elaborate. Sarah is writing, perhaps the best way to get something clear is to battle it out with someone with opposing views. Thus, he is involved in the war. Okay. Lima is writing, defend God was to the study and war, and honor was towards the rise up and early late, oh, at night. Okay. All right. Not really clear on that, Lima. When you say defend God was to the study. I don't know what you mean by defend. Sarah, I hear your point about battling it out. Let me see, Sarah, you wrote further. It is best for his perfection because this is how he gets the ideas clearest to himself and possibly to others that he is at war with, so to speak. Okay. Right, I agree. I'll just take that a step further, Sarah. The battling means to say, Gene, you wrote the word dedication. Right. It means to say that you want to see something clearly. You don't let up until it's clear to you. So again, truth is the theme which is running through here. When you battle out something, all right, you battle it because you want to get to the to I guess the like for example a war. What's the analogy? You battle the war until you win. When you win, there's no more war. So when you conquer, so what's the conqueror? What's the act of conquering in studying? When you finally see the idea clear. So to you, it's something which it's you are relentless until you see the idea. So that's the first concept. Okay? So exactly like you're saying, having it clearest to himself and the dedication. But the dedication is for the sake of arriving at truth, wanting to know what is really true. Okay, so just like in a war, there's a battle. But then once you arrive at victory, there's no more war. So in your Torah study, you're battling to get the idea clearly, the new concept you want to see. Once you have it, you move on to the next one. But then the question comes up, why is it insufficient? If you just do that, why must you be the first one in the study hall in the morning and the last one at night? What does that show? What perfection does that show? Okay, that's the fifth and final perfection that Yeshaya is talking about, Isaiah is referring to. What do you think? What is the need? What is lacking in a person if he does not, if he's not the first one to open up the study hall and if he's not the last one to leave? But if he is the first one there and the last one to go at night, what perfection is that? That's the question now. Okay, Sarah wrote a love of learning. Okay, elaborate, Sarah. Lima is writing drive. Chana is saying self-discipline and the passion for discovering the truth and gaining knowledge. Okay, that would be a good answer for the fourth one, why it's called a war when he's studying Torah. But I don't see how that explains that he's the first one in the study hall or in the temple or the last one at night. He's the first to come and the last to leave. All right, he opens and he closes the place. What? How can we define that perfection? True Lima, he's got a desire to learn, but he had a desire to learn in the fourth perfection too, where he was in battling Torah. That also shows a love, a desire to learn. You have to say more than just that, because that can sufficiently answer the before. When you give an answer to something, it has to be able to answer it exclusively. Okay, Jean is writing a devotion to study and to pray. It's true, it's a devotion. But again, that devotion is displayed even if you do it once a day. What's the idea of it being the first thing you do in the morning and the last thing you do at night? Think about it. Chanaset, there you go. It's the most important thing. There we go. Okay, Sarah's writing, being first there and last to go shows more than a practical gain for knowledge. It shows he is there because it is something he loves. Okay, true, but Chana hit it on the head. All right, you're basically saying it's the most important thing. All right, not just compulsion, Lima. Avram in New York is writing, coming first and leaving last means he shows true devotion to God, that this is his true life. Good. Chana writes further, you put gaining knowledge and truth before other things. Stephen writes, it encompasses your entire life, every waking moment. Very good. Okay, so you all have the same answer. Right, exactly. Meaning it's the best. In the person's mind, that is the most prized activity. So it's not only number four tells us that a person has to be, his relationship to study is not just a battle, which means that he's involved in something until he wins, until he sees the idea as truth. Fine, but that you can do 5 minutes a day. But that is only shows that he has the quality, the relationship to learning is there. But the question is it the most prized activity in the person's life? That's when you really know a person has reached perfection. When he sees everything else in life as simply a means. He works because he needs money to live. So he doesn't get involved in building empires and wanting to have the fastest sports car or wanting to have the best suits. These are not goals to a person who is a clear thinker and sees truth. He realizes life is important, that physical needs should be taken care of, but he sees that God bestowed man and no other creature with intelligence, with the ability to perceive. And he starts to live that life, and he starts to perceive this knowledge that God desires that we see, and that God did not create any other creature with this apparatus, with the soul. So a person starts to learn, and he starts to see the ideas clearly. Ah, now it starts to be an enjoyable thing to him. And now he starts to see how everything else falls by the wayside. They have their place, it's important, and he enjoys to go out with friends for a dinner once in a while, and he takes care of his emotions, that they're in check and that they're being taken care of in the right way. But his emotions are always guided by his intelligence. But what he really values, he sees what's the most amazing thing in life is when he sees new ideas and he sees that this is really his purpose. Okay. Avram New York is writing, it shows that this part of your life 100% of the time. Exactly. And again, listen, a person has to work. A person has to make a living for themselves. Ein kemach, ein Torah, Pirkei Avos says. If there's no flour, meaning if there's no food, if you don't work to the fields, or today, you don't work, your job in order to have money, you can't buy food. Of course, we should try to minimize the amount of time that we're working and maximize our learning. And that's what Pirkei Avos also says. Have a ma'at ba'osik ve'osik b'torah. You should minimize the work involvement and maximize your Torah involvement. And the Gemara in Moed Katan tells us that the greatest command over all of the commands, as taught by King Solomon in Proverbs, is Torah study. That is the greatest command. And that's what we should be striving to put our energies in the most. So we see that it's not enough just to be involved in the battle of study, of studying Torah. But what's more of a perfection is that when a person it's the first thing on his mind in the morning, and it's the last thing on his mind at night. It means he's preoccupied. It's something which he treasures. It's something which he values over all else. Okay, now Avraham in New York has a good question. Everything said and done, how do we accomplish this? Okay, so you're asking how do we accomplish? Let me just clarify your question. Make sure I have it, Avraham. Are you asking how do we accomplish this perfection? How do we get to the point of this strong attachment to Torah, that it's the first thing in the morning and last at night? Is that what you're asking? I'm going to wait a moment. Just want to make sure that I have Avraham's question clear. I don't want to answer something which he's not asking. That would not be a fruitful endeavor. I'm assuming, Avraham, that's what you're getting. You want to know everything said and done. How do we accomplish reaching that level of attachment to study, that it's something which is inseparable from us, that we are just preoccupied with? But just type on the screen just to clarify what your question is. Okay, so that is your question. So Avraham is asking, everything said and done, how do we reach the point where learning is that much of an enjoyment to us? Well, there's only one way, and that's by starting to put the time into learning and making sure you have, number one, you have to have a good teacher. You're not going to learn well just from anybody who's, that can teach. You should be careful. You should, first of all, we have great sages. We have learning you can do on your own as well. But if you haven't reached a point yet where we're fluent in Talmud study, which is, it's just hard to get to, you have to make sure you have a good teacher that shows you. Pay him if that's what it takes. Pay him to teach you how to learn Talmud, and because Talmud is how our minds are trained and we become independent learners. That's an important thing, to become an independent Talmud student. You have to go through the areas yourself too, even when you don't have the time to be in front of a teacher, going through the Torah, the weekly Parsha, and doing it with the commentary so you understand clearly the basic of where, everything comes from in Torah is the Chumash, the five books. And going through prophets. But the study of Talmud is crucial. And as you put more time into it, and you start to see new worlds of ideas opening up, it'll be something which naturally draws you in. Now, that's true, Gabriel. It's like a natural process of falling in love with learning, as somebody falls in love with an object that tastes good to him. Right. It's the more a person puts the time into the study. I saw it myself. When I first started learning, it was not something which was coming so quickly. But you put the dedication and the time, and you break your teeth on studying Tosfos and the Talmud and asking questions and never being bashful. I mean, Pirkei Avos also says that lo habayish and lo meid, the person who is embarrassed will not learn. Meaning you have to ask questions. And the fundamentals are very important. Not just studying the Talmud, but then halacha. We have to know the principles of Torah. Maimonides' 13 principles. And understanding why the Ten Commandments. Well, why is that something which is offset from the rest of the Torah? What are those crucial ideas? And the whole event of Mount Sinai. Why did God create that? I mean, everything that God does in the Torah, there's a tremendous amount of wisdom there. You're talking about an infinitely wise creator that's responsible for the universe. I mean, studying the universe, too, is a great thing, because we get so enamored and struck with awe when we see what God created. The Navi even ridicules somebody who has the ability to study the physical world and doesn't. So it's quite important that the more time you put into it, the more the attachment comes. So that's how it answers your question, Avraham. Meaning to say that the attachment only comes when you see more of what the whole system is. And you have to be true to reason as well. Again, the beginning of the five perfections, again, are number one, being honest with yourself about your own perfections. Rambam even says, a friend of mine reminded me, he showed me the other day, the Maimonides says that you don't teach a person unless he has proper character traits. So you see, that's first in our verse here in Yeshaya. A good friend of mine, Lewis, had suggested a very good answer as well. He says, not only are these five perfections, but they're in an order, meaning the first has to come first. First, you become morally perfected. You look at your own personality, and you detect where your flaws are, and you work on them. Then you apply it in terms of life. You're honest in terms of your own life, your dealings. You express that perfection in everyday life. Then, when sin comes, as it invariably, you know, invariably, a person is tempted throughout the week. Different sins. I'll speak bad about somebody, or sexual areas, or robbing money from the business. Whatever it is, there is temptation. A person has to be able to conquer that, and that we said is done when he has knowledge and he sees how it harms himself. Then, now that the person has cultivated himself in terms of his moral character, now he has to be involved in study. But it's not just a study on the level of having a war with study, meaning he's really battling with the person that he learns with to get the truth. But the last perfection tells us that it has to be something he's preoccupied with all day. And we have to push ourselves a little bit at first to get there. Then it'll start coming. And then it'll start becoming an activity which there's an attraction to, and we will value it over all else. So that's how I would answer that question. Okay, any questions at this point? We'll wrap it up right after we do the last round of questions. If you have any questions, please type them in on the screen. But you see that you can divide these five into two areas, moral, the areas of morality, and also areas of wisdom, truth. And those are the two areas that our knowledge is involved with in life, moral truths and absolute truths. What is good and what is bad, and how we apply it to ourselves, and also what is true and what is false. Whole study of Torah is an understanding of ideas that are true and ideas are false. Idolatry is false. The fact that God is one is a truth. And it applies in all areas. Okay, so if you have any questions, we'll type them in now. Chana, yes. I mean, a woman has to do mitzvahs also, so she should. I mean, you can't do a mitzvah without understanding it. So you should be studying those mitzvahs that apply to you. You're not obligated in Torah study and teaching like a man is. That's the man's role, is to proliferate the Torah. A woman has a role in Judaism to raise and to nurture the children, to create human beings that are psychologically sound and healthy. So we both work equally to create the next generation. But in terms of the commands that each one of us have, yeah, just like we have to study to know what our performance should be, so you have to study as well to know your performances. Mark is asking, is the class over? Yeah, we're just about to wrap it up, Mark. We started about an hour and 15 minutes ago. We started at 3:30. Okay, so if there's any questions on the class, type it in the bottom, and then we'll wrap up. Okay, Stephen, Arizona. The early part of the discussion is very similar to Stephen Carter's definition of integrity. He says it requires three steps. Number one, discerning what is right and what is wrong. Number two, acting on what you have discerned, even at personal cost. And number three, saying openly that you are acting on your understanding of right and wrong. Okay, the first criterion captures the idea of integrity as requiring a degree of moral reflectiveness. Good. The second brings the ideal of an integral personalness, steadfast, which includes keeping commitments. Good, so that's action. The third reminds us that a person of integrity is something doing the right. Okay, but then there has to be the learning part, though. Okay, Stephen, that's, again, I guess Carter's leaving out the concept of battling with truths. That whole area you seem to omit. Okay. So knowledge seems to be something which Carter left out. If you're trying to spell a word, though, Stephen, just try spelling it a different way. That'll still give me the same gist. That's probably why you're getting the sensor notice over there. Okay, any other questions before we wrap it up for today? And again, you could listen to the class in full about 20 minutes after the class is over. It'll be on the audio files link. So if you missed anything, you could hear it from the beginning. Okay, so you're saying the third reminds us that a person of integrity is not shameful of doing the right thing. All right, true, but that, again, that of course, is demanded by a person's honesty. A person should not be interested in the accolades of others. Unfortunately, that's a lot of what people do. Okay, Shoshana, my pleasure. Chana is writing, is there an email address where we can suggest topic ideas for classes? Certainly, Chana. You could send an email to info@misora.org. And again, if you have questions during the week, you can feel free just to email the question in if there's something that you need an answer to. But again, the person has to be clear that you have to live for yourself, and you have to see what the Torah tells you is true and correct, and it does not matter how many other people are doing something different. Okay, Sarah, my pleasure. All right, so it looks like that is it for now. Again, we'll send an email announcement out the next time we have a class planned. And we may actually, if we could work it out, do a class this Thursday at 2:45 New York time. Okay, Chana, my pleasure. Thank you. So stay posted on that. We'll try to see, because it'll be off premises, and we'll try to see if we can work out a way to broadcast the class from a remote location. Okay, Stephen, my pleasure. I'm glad you enjoy the class. Esther in New York, we just finished the class now, Esther. I'm sorry. We started at 3:30. All right, then. So we'll wrap it up now. I hope everybody else has a good day. Okay, Lima, I'm glad you enjoyed the class. And again, the whole class will be posted about 20 minutes or so on the audio file. So if you missed anything, you'll be able to listen to the whole class. Okay, so I wish everybody a good day, and we'll be in touch by email. I'll let you know when the next class is coming up.